above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string and makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night falls in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse.
Tonight, and Ken, and with more information, we have Ken Dose, and we're being joined by Lori. Texas 101 is with us tonight, co-hosting with me. We have had many conversations with Ken, and they are always enlightening. And Mike, is Ken with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there he is. Welcome to the show,
brother. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And it's good to have you, man.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, you were talking with us earlier about some more revelations that you've had, some more discoveries. And why don't we jump in? I'm going to turn the show over to you, brother, and share with the audience what you will.
Okay. Well, great. I appreciate that. We have talked several times, and we've come down. We've had conversations on patents and intellectual properties and whatnot. But now we're getting down to the point of how do we find our remedy and what is our remedy. I think most of us will agree that going at this on the outlaw side, there is no remedy that can be really had. The way that we need to go about this is we need to, and this is some research that I came across and some things that I've come across my table and across my group many times, and it's this issue of equity. And as I researched it even more and got even more deeper into it, I've come to realize, and dealing with people like with Anna up in Alaska and other people in that group, and come to a determination that really this is the only remedy that we can have is by moving this thing over into exclusive equity. And to abandon this at-law side, trying to fight statutes and rules and regs that we just cannot possibly beat. We cannot win because we don't have standing. And I think that this is the answer, is to go towards equity, understand what equity is, and basically do if I had my way, I would basically just abandon and ban the word foreclosure, because foreclosure applies to a mortgage. And really, we're not dealing with mortgages here. We're dealing with underlying schemes and intentional schemes to build wealth and accrue wealth against our estate, and then come and trespass upon it and steal that estate. So what we're dealing with here is we're dealing with not a mortgage per se. What we're dealing with is we're dealing with common law trespass and theft of estates, theft of our estate, which all goes towards probate, and not the courts that we're in, which is these administrative courts pretending to be judicial courts.
Well, I tell you, it's very interesting, the aspect of abandoning that public side. To me, it makes sense. when you were talking with me earlier, we were talking about giving notice, and many of the things that I recall hearing my father say as a judge over the course of his years, I'm starting to hear little bits and pieces are starting to make sense.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, we've been conditioned to, I know when I went into court, I thought I was going to go in there blazing saddles and defend my property, and I went in with the clear-cut notion and understanding that, hey, this is not a mortgage loan. And I went in with that argument and said, hey, this is an investment contract, I'm the beneficiary, blah, 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 so on and so forth, and I basically got slammed around. I mean, I did pretty well, but I still got slammed around in the end run, and the reason why was because I did not understand that the court I was walking into is not a court of justice. It's a court acting in justice, but acting as a judicial body or judicial proceeding, but in actuality is an administrative proceeding. And the reason why I was brought there was for the court to fulfill its corporate task, which is essentially to give relief to plaintiffs who post their bills, which in this case was HSBC. So, and I'm also walking into a court that cannot see me or cannot recognize me, so I really have no standing in that court whatsoever. So really, we've got to, I think, and that was a big awakening for me. That was a huge awakening for me, and I realized I had no standing, and I really, really realized for the first time what admiralty means and what all the underlying aspects of it are. It's pretty eye-opening.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we were talking about earlier and kind of want to go into a little bit is we were talking about private side versus the public side, which a lot of people are having, like you said, the concept when we were talking earlier, have a hard time with the concepts of private versus public, the person versus the natural person. And how going in administratively versus going through a court of equity, if we can kind of explain the difference between the two and how that's a first step, and then we'll go into the paperwork that you filed because it was quite extraordinary when we went through it.
Okay. Well,
but if that private versus public versus the equity and administrative, those two things are hard for people. And when you understand it, it goes not only into mortgages, but, you know, like we were talking about earlier, CPS, the education, the health care, all the other issues that other people are working on.
Right, right. Well, the difference that I understand, that I've come to understand between the at-law side and equity is basically you're dealing with two competing worlds of the law. You know, you've got the written law versus unwritten law. You know, enumerated law versus the unenumerated law. And then fictional realm, we talked about that, versus the substantive realm. And that's the at-law versus the equitable side. You know, at the at-law side, you've got commerce. Of course, we're dealing with War Powers Act and the public, and that's the at-law side. On the equity side, we're dealing with equity issues, private and substantive. So it's two totally different bodies of law. When you get into the private, the way that they've engineered the private is these are where all our estates, our estate monies, our annuities, our trusts, all these things that these bankers set up behind our backs when we execute these mortgage loans, which we didn't know about, are functioning in the private realm. So if you try to go on the at-law side of this and bring all these private matters into the public forum, then you're going to be in for you're in trouble. You know, you got some problems. You can't do that. That's like mixing apples and oranges. So, you know, when you go in at the at-law side, and the at-law side is all public. It deals with bonds and bond issues and debt, right?
Right.
And so, and that's what we've been set up into. You know, they've done a brilliant, and I will give it to them, they've done a brilliant, brilliant job of snowballing the global population. I mean, just a brilliant job. They've done a brilliant job of convincing us that we were purchasing mortgage loans, that we were getting a mortgage loan. Own it mortgage. the one that I got lured into. I sit back and I look at them now and I think, geez, oh man, you guys should all be thrown in prison, because what you were doing, you were false advertising. Your whole business model was fraudulent because you were purporting to be a lender of mortgage loan products, when in fact what you were peddling was investment contracts for future annuities that are for really my benefit, but you got us into an agreement to where we give it all up and give it to you. And so this isn't a mortgage loan at all. What it is, it's an investment contract. It doesn't have to do with real property. It has to do with intellectual properties. It has to do with my signature, my identity, my labor, and most of all, my estate. So to sit there and say that we were purchasing mortgage loans, to me, is a total farce. It doesn't exist. But they did a brilliant job of engineering this farce. And over on the top of it, what do they put? They put MERS, Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems, right? Mortgage, reinforcing that word mortgage. But when you get down to it, MERS, Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems, has nothing to do with real property whatsoever. It has to do with life cycle annuities and insurance contracts and rehypothecation of your name, and has nothing to do with real property whatsoever. So, I mean, they've done a brilliant job of snowing us.
And you were also talking about an electronic or a universal, and I can't remember what it was, the universal group that was like MERS, but they did that with our annuities and traded our signature. What was that called again?
Well, that's a universe of assets. That's what I think it was J.P. Morgan Chase that coined that, or Morgan Stanley, one of the two. And what that is basically us as our labor, the collateral value, our actuarial value, our life earning potential value, all these values that are attached to our lives and our productivity, the assets that we the things that we purchase, the things that we finance, so on and so forth. So when we signed these mortgage loans, the first thing that they did was they created an asset. And that asset is our signature. And it goes into the universe of assets. So when Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or any of these Wall Street banks or any of these investment houses or any of these hedge funds are looking to create an investment of some sort, they've got a universe of assets to choose from. And we are, every one of us, every single person in the globe is has a mark in this universe of assets that are picked and chosen from for various investment opportunities that require, certain, if you fit their criteria, you're in it, and the reason why they're able to do this is because we have never claimed that asset. We've never claimed ourselves as an asset. And because we've never done that, we're up for the picking, so to speak, in this universe of assets. So what we've got to do is we've got to take claim to our name, so to speak, and kind of take claim to our asset, which is what we haven't done.
And that's where it's hard for people to understand. One of the key things is we were talking about the avatar versus the real living, breathing being. And when they go in and we're talking about signatures and the things that they do with these universal assets, this is in that matrix world with that avatar, that they're going into this unbelievable world and taking our data. Then everybody think about your data with the education. They're taking that data and they're going to, based on the criteria, sell and invest in this universal asset. So if people understand what's going on with our data, this is what they do, and this is just mortgages that we're dealing with. It's just one little cog that they're doing that on, that you've discovered, and you've discovered the patents that they did in mortgages for this.
Oh, there's innumerable number of patents. That's the problem. And we're not dealing with one person. We're dealing with the fraction. We talked about this earlier about the banking, about the Federal Reserve and fractionalization of money. What they've done here is they've gone one step farther in this, and they have fractionalized the individual. And what I mean by that is they have taken one of us and have created 1,000 of us in 1,000 different places at one time. Trading and selling and buying our property over and over again. It's no different than a book. It really isn't. It's when you sign that mortgage loan agreement, we're under the impression that it's a negotiable instrument. After all, when they foreclose upon us, they tell it's a negotiable instrument, which implies a four corners signed, sealed, and delivered agreement. That once it's sold one time to from one buyer to another buyer, right? And
right.
You have a chain of title. You have endorsements, you have a recording to the county, and so on and so forth. And that's it. But that's not the case here. The case, the instance here, is that they never sold anything. What they sold was our signature time and time again on the same piece of property time and time again, just like a book. It's no different than taking your deed of trust and making 1,000 copies of it and stamping 1995 on it and putting it on a bookstore or bookshelf at Borders Books and selling 1,000 copies at 1995. It's the same thing here, except instead of 1995, it's $350,000 or $500,000 or whatever. And they did that by fractionalization. So to say that there's one-tenth of us, or say that there's 10 one-tenths of us out there all selling for one-tenth of the price is not accurate. They're selling one-tenth of us at 100% value time and time again. When you look at it in that realm, now you're talking about, now you got to be scratching your head and thinking, okay, wait a minute, where's my cut at? How come I'm not getting anything out of this?
And in that, when they take it private versus the public side as well, and the public side, you don't know anything about it, but when you go to the private side, that's when you can try to see what's going on.
Well, the only way you're going to get to the private side is through equity. You're not going to get through it on the at-law side. You can't. How are you going to raise it in an at-law court? You can't bring a private matter into the public forum. But that's what they've done. They have done it. They have taken us our signature. And in addition to selling us time and time again, what they've done also is they've insured us. They insured the value of our lives, and they've accrued annuities behind that through various trust instruments. And this is verifiable and easily provable through the indenture agreements that we're not aware of. Merrill Lynch's indenture agreement, for instance, talks clearly about, and by the way, it doesn't matter whether you're Countrywide, Bank of America, any other bank, Wells Fargo, everybody goes through Merrill Lynch, everybody, just like everybody goes through Wells Fargo, just like everybody goes through HSBC. It doesn't matter who your bank is, because they're all participants in this, and they all have a role in this depending on what their for lack of better terms, what their expertise is. Merrill Lynch's expertise is patented in estates and separately managed accounts. So the indenture to Merrill Lynch sets up the trust for $1, describes the declaration of trust in the REMIC and in the REIT, and then basically plainly says when a person defaults, go ahead and put their signature on it, file it with the county, issue will be debt opinions so that all these bonds issue, and do an abandonment of estate, and by the way, separate all the books. So, I mean, the evidence is there that they're screwing us. I mean, the evidence is clearly there. But to get that into the at-law side, I think is going to be a hell of a task. So it's easier to say, and we can't really bring that in, because now all of a sudden you're talking about annuities and insurance contracts that are on the private side, and we can't bring that into public forum. But what we have to do is we've got to bring the books together. Only place to do that is in equity.
Wow. And that's the... Hey, shut your mouth. That's where we're at now. And you're actually doing some of this and have actually sent some paperwork to the county. And they actually agreed to allow you to record this, correct?
Yeah, surprised the hell out of me. I mean, I know that a lot of people have a hard time getting any kind of documents, birth documents or any kind of authentications of that nature, any kind of transfers. People have a hard time. A lot of counties won't record it, and they just refuse to. My county, as a fact, in fact, wouldn't record anything as well. They had a hard time recording when I filed my inexclusive equity package under necessity, and I filed my the Treaties of Ghent and the Red Cross Convention and all of those. They didn't want to record that at first, but they said they had to check with counsel. But what really surprised me, though, was getting a phone call back saying, oh, yeah, we'll record it for you, and then all of a sudden being treated like gold going down there. So their whole attitude has changed towards me. And I think the reason for that is they see that I'm going in the right direction, and they see that if they don't get out of the way, that that they're going to get nailed.
Right.
Because I can show, and we can show, that the county courts, or the county, I'm sorry, the county, is complicit with altering information and doctoring information through these processes. And they're changing our political status from married, you know, husband, wife, settler, spouse, to partner, as in a corporate structure, so that they can disregard us as an entity and then domesticate us in foreclosure to evict us and to hit us with deferred taxes. So we know this is going on in the county for sure. So the county, I think, is taking a back seat to this and saying, basically saying, we're getting out of the way. And I'm just making a supposition there, because their whole attitude has changed. But to me, that seems like what they're doing is they're getting out of the way.
No, one of the things I want to make clear to everybody listening is that you're actually getting things approved before you're recording them. You're going through and doing things the right way. You're not forcing it down anyone's throat. You're doing your research. You're working with other people that are working behind you that are doing this. I don't want to say you're doing this on your own, because there's teams and research of people before.
There's a good team I work with, Anna Van Rijts, Denny George, Lorna Marish, Mark Kay, Bob Locke, a few others. We're all kind of going off in a little bit different direction to some degree, but at the same time, we're all headed towards the same direction, which is, we're all agreeing that the direction is through equity. And through the probate court, because that's the only court that deals with the states, and that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the states, and the probate is also one of the highest courts in the land. And you know, also too, as the executor, which was what we are, we've got carte blanche authority overall. But the question here's what gets tricky, though. The tricky part of this gets into not mixing apples and oranges. I'm careful not to file any commercial liens. You know, I'm going to be filing a UCC-1 application, but I'm not filing it. I'm filing as a non-UCC-1 as the Baylor Bailey. I'm not filing a commercial lien. I'm not doing anything like that, because if I do that, I'm going to end up in jail. And that's why people do end up in jail, is because they're filing these commercial liens. They don't have the authority to do so, and they're not understanding what's really taking place here. And that's what concerns me. You know, you've got a lot of people out there that are talking about, you know, the value of money, mechanics of money, all these issues with currency and whatnot. And, you know, by and large, those concepts are dead. They're long gone. We're dealing with a totally different type of economy, 21st century digital economy, where value is not in currency. It's an electronic book entry. And so we're dealing with totally different issues here that we've got to understand what we're dealing with and how to deal with these things. And filing commercial liens against judges or banks or attorneys, not the right way to go with this thing, because we don't have the authority until we get the authority, which is, of course, authentications of your birth and named a DBA, and clearly defining where you are and where you stand on the land, essentially, and who you are.
And that's a couple
a big
of questions.
Thing. That's a huge issue.
That's a huge thing. And that's a couple of questions that I had before the show. I put out
to a couple people that we were going to be talking, and they don't understand, you know, the admiralty, that we're lost at sea, or that we're declared dead because we don't know we're alive, and all these things are nutty and crazy, and until you actually go to court and the judge pulls these things on you, which has happened to me, like I told you earlier, you really want to say it's not true, but it is. And when you go into those courts, you're going into another realm, as you call it. And that's the key thing that I know we're getting close to the break. We've got just a few minutes here. But when we come back, I do want to make sure we go touch a little bit on, you know, the life, the death, the knowing who you are, the incompetence, and then get into some of the paperwork that you filed, because when we go through that, it's going to make a lot of sense to people how it applies to every issue that they're working on, and that things are starting to pull together. Everybody's research is so important. It's starting to pull together. And when the court or the county accepted this paperwork and we went over it, I was like, we're getting there. It makes so much sense now to me with the fact that they would accept it, along with the treaties that you sent over. We're all getting a little piece of the pie, and it's all starting to come together.
I think it is. I think so. I think that we'll make it. I mean, I was floored. I really did not expect them to give the okay that they were going to record the ecclesiastical deed poll, much less the other documents I had in there. I was truly, truly floored by that. Truly surprised, because I was thinking, well, if I can't get it recorded here, I understand that, I think it was Lamar County in Georgia, will record about anything, because they're very liberal. I was kind of half expecting that would be my next stop. But when I got a phone call and said, yeah, we'll record it, I about fell off my stool. I thought, all right, they're seeing it. And I know they're seeing it. I know, because in these couple of these filings, I clearly state, I mean, these are notices, or declarations, or affidavits, or not straight out accusations, but I clearly give notice and state that that they can be very well proven that the county, state, and federal agencies are complicit to what is a major fraud, identity theft and fraud, and administrative claims will be filed or can be filed, but preferably this is moving towards exclusive equity. So I think that, and this is their counsel. The county's counsel, so it's an attorney, the counsel that reviewed these and gave the okay on it. So I was very surprised.
That's good. That's really good, because now you've got the bar saying, yep, it is true, in a silent way, and accepted the documentation.
That the American Bar Association is greatly responsible for this, and they are. They're kind of the go-between between the state, county, federal agencies and the banks, and through their administrative, through all these uniform acts that are, you know, uniform, simultaneous death act, uniform, minors transfer to minors act, all these uniform codes are written and instituted and administered by the American Bar Association. So, the American Bar Association absolutely is. I hope to God that they burn in hell, and I think they will. The more people that start to understand what direction I think we should go in, is kind of like, it's beautiful to some degree, because you're undermining the system without directly confronting the system, so to speak.
And we're about to go to a break. The other side, let's cover the other issues.
Yeah, we will be right back. Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Yeah.
broadcast on RBS. Folks, if you would go kindly to ResurrectionRepublic.com and click on that PayPal button, send us a little bit of love. Show your appreciation for us being here 2 hours every night, Monday through Friday, to bring you this information. And you can find Ken Dost on ResurrectionRepublic.com. He's got a little section there, and he will be publishing in the future when we finally can sit down and organize that a little bit better. I'm going to make it a point to make that happen this week, if you can set some time aside there, Ken. So I don't want to get off the momentum that we've been going on. I'm gonna step back and kind of sit back and let you share this information. The public really needs to hear this stuff. So go ahead and have at it, brother.
You still there, Ken?
I am.
Well, one of the things that we needed to start off with before we go through this paperwork is a lot of people don't understand assumptions and presumptions, or consent silentio. The two things that I didn't understand when I started out, anytime you go to court, there's a lot that's assumed and presumed. And really? Those are the things that, yeah, those are the things that they're doing to us. That's the grand deception, as I call it. Along with consent silentio, which is your silent consent, you're consenting without knowing about it by your silence. Mm-hmm. And that's, right. You know, not only, yeah, it's not only when you send them paperwork and they don't say anything back, you're doing that as well, and you don't know it because you don't understand, or you don't comprehend, excuse my words, what they're doing. And a lot of people that are at the, you know, I'm just a mom, and just the moms and dads out there aren't understanding the deception that's going on of the public versus the private, and what we're saying when they're declaring us, you know, not on the land and at sea and dead and all of this. Well, one of the assumptions and presumptions that they've done, and they've brought it through legislations and treaties into the United States from, I believe, England, is that we're dead, and that we don't know that we're not dead to them. Not to us, not we're living in the real world. This is the matrix world and the fake world that they've created that Ken keeps talking about. And when you walk into the court, you're walking into that matrix world, and you're assumed and presumed that you're dead, and you don't know it because you're giving them a dead entity, your birth certificate, your all caps name, which means dead name. And when you're doing that, that's the game that they're playing to you. And that's what we mean by admiralty and lost at sea, and the 7 years rule of you're lost at sea. You can't come back to life. You've heard the cases of the people and the judges say, no, you can't have your life back. And I'm going, yay, I wish I could get there. And they're going, no, I want my life back. Well, they're asking
you
to be dead.
Well, you can't get your life back by going to equity.
They actually have their life. They've been kicked out of the system, which to me is a good thing. But
that's not necessarily a good thing. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, we talk about, and I was on board with this as well. I know a lot of my team members are still on board with this, but I'm kind of deviating from this insofar as, are we American citizens or are we non-resident aliens? Now, going in from the side of equity and addressing the issue of life and death, and more so in regard to the War Powers Act and us as being enemy combatants. Interesting concept I found going through equity is the door to get through to equity is by claiming yourself as a private citizen of the United States of America, privately residing and privately domiciling outside of federal district within a non-military occupied private estate, not subject to the United States of America. Or not subject
is
to the United
the
States,
treaty
I'm sorry.
That you went through?
Pardon me?
That's the Treaty of Ghent that you went to, and I would say that wrong.
This is a concept to go through to get into equity and to make your claim as far as, because if you're a United States citizen, you're subject to the jurisdiction, and so the general thought is, well, we're not citizens, we're non-resident aliens, or we're state nationals, and that may be very true, because if we're saying we're non-resident aliens, we're saying that, okay, well, we were born in a hospital, most of us, and if you accept the fact that a hospital is an international zone, then you are not born in the United States, you were born in an international zone, and when our mother left the hospital because she did not have a passport for us, then we're basically immigrants onto the land that have become naturalized into citizenship. And that's where the concept comes in as far as non-resident aliens are concerned. And, of course, being born outside of federal district, what's the federal district? That's the 10 square miles of Washington, D.C. So, I mean, there's a lot of issues with residency and citizenship. But I like this because I personally, it scares the hell out of me to expatriate myself. I don't, everything that I've read on it and have researched on it through the Department of Homeland Security, it's a kind of a big no-no to go ahead and expatriate yourself in that fashion. And you kind of do strip yourself of rights. And we don't want to, you know, there's a lot of people that want to get themselves away as far away from the American government as possible and want nothing to do with it. I really disagree with that.
Huh?
I disagree with that. We want to use it as a conduit to get to where we need to go. And where we need to go, where I believe we need to go, is we need to, of course, claim our assets and our name back and our property back, but then take ourselves private. And so we're not really, we're functioning within the system that has been established, and we're doing so lawfully, and we're doing so without injury or without being injured. I think that's where we need to go with this. I don't think expatriating ourselves is the right answer.
The public has been really, truly dumbed down. And, you know, it's not through any fault of their own. I hear some people saying, well, you know, we've allowed this to do this or we've allowed this to do that. This has been a maniacal plan over the course of many decades. So now that we've realized that, some nights we point that out and we teach people about how badly that has happened. But lately, I believe in being a little bit more solution-based. And if you look back to our founders and to some of their statements, like Benjamin Franklin said, you know, we've given you a republic if you could keep it. And then systematically, the powers that be did everything that they could to keep the information on how we were to function in this republic. They've kept it from people and dumbed them down for generations to the point where people walk around with microphones doing interviews with people in the street and asking them what DC stands for. Even tell them that. So
right.
I so much. It's like a breath of fresh air when you come in here with this information, Ken. I thank you so much, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. You know, when you go into equity, you are going back to our founding times, essentially, at least the mid-1800s, and back to the Judiciary Act of 1789. So you are stripping it down to, like, I guess you would say an Article 3 court. When you talk about presumptions, we're talking about presumptions of administrative processes. But with equity, what you're doing is you're kind of confirming and saying, hey, there's a notice of conflict or a variance of law between the equitable side and the at-law side the only remedy to be had is in exclusive equity. And I'll read you the notice. This is a notice I put in with my filing, which I came across and I researched, and I think it's just fantastic. And it's a notice of conflict or variance of law. And it says, in the event of conflict between this and any previous documents, the statement and claims in this affidavit shall be determined to be my correct claims on the matter. In the event the interpretation of words, doctrine, idea, principle, and laws are in conflict, then the rules, interpretations, principles, and laws shall be of England and American equity jurisprudence, protected by Constitutional Article 3, Section 2, Subdivision 1, maxims of equity, and private trust law shall always prevail. Take notice that the primary equitable rights expressed herein are not cognizable at law, and thus I am without a speedy, adequate, and complete remedy at law, and therefore presents a conflict or variance of the rules of law over subject matter of the state of Oregon, registered organization and trade name, Kenneth William Doss, lowercase, and Kenneth William Doss, all caps. Said conflict is determined by the High Court of Judicature Act of 1873, amended 1875, and enforced by said USA's Judiciary Act, 1789, Section 11, Section 16, and Section 20, as well as stated by the Supreme Court of Minnesota, Dunnell's 1910-3140. When there is a conflict between the rules of equity and the rules of the common law over the name over the same subject matter, the rules of equity shall prevail, to the exclusion of generally Roman civil law or Roman equity de jure, statutes and codes, or international law by applying the maxim of equity. So that's where we're going with this, is getting into equity here that does recognize the fact that we are under English law, and in this case it's English common law to common law states.
Yes.
And that gets us right back to the Constitution. Can we hold callers until we go through these affidavits and then get to the callers?
Before we go on to another topic, if I could, there's a lot of old laws on this. 1907 Supreme Court of North Carolina, 1926 Supreme Court of Mississippi. But let's bring it current and bring it to a 2003 case, BOV State 139 Idaho. This was in 2003. Supreme Court of Idaho. They say there is, in this state, but one form of civil actions for the enforcement or protection of private rights and redress or prevention of private wrongs, provided that in all matters not regulated by this code in which there is any conflict or variance between the rules of equity jurisprudence and the rules of common law with reference to the same matter, the rules of equity shall apply. 2007 in Utah, whenever there is any variance between the rules of equity and the rules of common law in reference to the same matter, the rules of equity shall prevail. 2010, Connecticut Superior Court, a Supreme Court, whenever there is any variance between the rules of equity and the rules of common law in reference to the same matter, the rules of equity shall apply. So see, these are concepts that are very well updated it's not just back in 1800s. Early 1900s. These are laws that are being recognized, and concepts are being recognized in the 2000s. And what is recognizing is that there is a difference between common law and equity. And when there is a difference, the rules of equity take precedence. And that's where we need to go with these things.
Right.
And that gets us back to constitutional. And just to the callers, if we can just go through these...
You need to check your messages. We do have a caller on the line.
Okay, thank you. I do want to go through the affidavits that you filed. You did send them over to your county. And these are the things that actually bring you back into the private side versus the public side. And if you look at the public side, or how I look at it, is that's the Matrix avatar. And going into the private side, you're living. And would you agree with that a little bit, Ken?
No, I would say the private side is more our avatar, because the private side is where we're being sold many, many times over. The public side is the bond side that shows us as debtors. Our avatar that is growing all these annuities and trading us time and time again are in the private.
So I
would see that I would kind of go reverse what you were saying in that respect.
And see, that's where I'm learning this too. We all are. But the first document that you saw, I can't even talk, that you sent over was an affidavit and notice of transmitting utility. And if you can go over a little bit how they use us as a transmitting utility and what that document is, I think that's going to open up a lot of eyes.
Well, transmitting utility is our all caps name. In my case, would be Kenneth W. Dost. What that is we're being used as to trading in public power, in telecommunications, all kinds of municipal funds and bond issues that we're carrying the collateral on as the grantor. we're so we're basically very valuable, essentially. We're funding a lot of our credit, our name, the value behind us is funding a lot of these public works programs, municipalities, bond issues, so on and so forth. Of course, we're not the recipient of any of these monies, and as a matter of fact, as the grantor, when we default, we take the hit as the debtor. So the Transmitting Utility is basically saying, hey, I have not volunteered for to act as a transmitting utility for any public works project, any municipality, any bond issue, anything whatsoever. Without my, and I was never given the express consent. I never even had any consent. I never had any knowledge. So I'm disclaiming myself from voluntarily acting as a transmitting utility. And in so doing, what we're going with equity in this is we're slowly transferring it over from a grantor to a grantor slash settler to a beneficiary grantee, and that's the purpose of going into equity. And that notice there is basically it's not a lien, it's not an accusation, it's simply a notice of to rebut any presumptions that are out there.
Exactly, and you were talking about a contract that one of the utility companies had. I can't remember the name of the company, but that you had read a. Go ahead.
That was Level 3 Communications, and that is the that is a conduit between state, federal, and county agencies and the banks and its transmitting utilities. And the name of the company is Level 3 Communications, which is a company of Merrill Lynch. Surprise, surprise. And it's a security agreement. I'll post it on my Facebook page later so people can see what I'm referring to. It's about a 60-page document. That's a security agreement. And we're the grantors within that. It very well describes us within this agreement. And it says that, you know, in events of default, that, you know, they can take the properties, that they take the profits, and, you know, we're the grantors to whatever they want us to be within this agreement as a transmitting utility of any sort. But there are provisions in there that says that the grantor can become a grantee, and when he does become a grantee, take all profits or take all money subject to the terms and conditions of being a grantee. So, you know, if you think about it, we're in this universe of assets where we're being bought and sold time and time over and over again. Well, you got to scratch your head and you got to think, wait a second here. If I'm being bought and sold so many times over, why am I not getting any share of the profits here? Why am I not getting any credits here? And what this agreement is saying to us is saying that you're a grantor until said time that you either become a grantee or you don't.
Right.
And when you become a grantee, then that's when you become a share of the profits. And what is becoming a grantee? Becoming a grantee is taking control of your transmitting utility, and that is connected to your real and true name, which is your lowercase, which is your, you know, authentication and birth certificate, put you back on the land.
Okay, and the second one you did was the affidavit of deed pulled by the real and true named natural person. And one of the questions I'd asked you before is a deed poll is ownership. And I'd asked you, you know, natural person, we'd gone over that a little bit. That's different than a person. And a deed poll is taking ownership. So can you kind of go over the affidavit of deed pulled by the real and true named natural person?
Well, the deed poll, what I did, my deed poll is I demand for, I come forth as a real and true name person. And the reason why I say real and true name person is I am using sections of code, of Oregon code, and I'm sure it's the same in every other state's code. You know, we talk about the living man, living woman. I think in my opinion, we've got to kind of modify that a little bit to be defined as a natural person, which is defined as the real and true name person, which is associated with DBA and doing business in assumed names. So So the code's recognizing real and true name. The reason why I titled it Real and True Name was to be within a statute or to be within code for the specific reason of what the Attorney General can do to give remedy to folks who are natural persons and not proprietorships and not partnerships. And so this kind of sets up, what I'm doing here is I'm kind of setting up myself to be able to put a claim into the Attorney General to say, hey, I am a natural person. This is my real and true name, my assumed business name that I have interest in these transmitting utilities, and give me remedy. Because the Attorney General will be is kind of, in, if not forced to act, but will take action for persons who are natural. I'm sorry, for natural persons, real and true names, who are not proprietorships or partnerships, which is exactly what we're dealing with here. So the depot here is just basically going through and saying that I demand that that correction to the records and a reconveyance of all my property, that I never agreed to be a trustee or anything associated with a public charities trust. I'm not a slave. I'm not an indentured servant. I did not agree to be as such, that I'm actually the holder in due course, so on so forth. So that's what that document is. And then of course what I do, so I don't get myself in trouble, is I do a swear statement and witness swear of where I can endorse blah blah blah, and I also kind of give myself an out to say that that everything's true and correct, but subject to amend in case of a mistake. So this way, if somebody comes out to me and says, throws me in jail or something, I've got a clause and they say, hey, wait a minute, I can amend this statement.
Exactly. And you did find something that the Attorney General in Oregon can help a natural person. Can you get over that a little bit? Because we haven't discussed that yet.
Well, yeah, that, you know, I know that I've been going through this crap for 15 years now. It started with U.S. Bank. And I went to the Attorney General many times begging them to help me. And every time, basically having don't let the door hit in the ass as you walk out, you know. So the Attorney General hasn't been helpful to me, and I know it hasn't been helpful to a lot of other people. However, within Oregon section on, I think it's trademarks, trademarks, patents, and intellectual properties. And in those sections, there is a notation in there that says the Attorney General will take action on behalf of natural persons who are not proprietorships, who are not partnerships, to give remedy for deceptive trade practices. Bingo. That's exactly what we're talking about here. We're talking about, first of all, coming back to life, or maybe a better word to use is recognizing our life and validating our life and coming of age with the authentication of our birth certificates, thereby establishing our natural person, thereby getting a DBA for our real and true name with interest in partnerships and proprietorships that were established behind our backs without our knowledge by deceitful practices and by fraudulent incorporation by reference.
There you go. And that,
I hope that makes sense.
That's a pretty,
came out kind
of fast. It makes sense. That's a very powerful document, I think. And with what you found for the Attorney General, I think that's going to answer a lot of questions for people if they can find that in their state as well.
I think it is very important. I mean, this issue of coming of age is very important, and of this life death issue. It really does. This is the hinge point of everything. It really is this hinge point about whether you want to call it lost at sea, whether we want to say dead, live, however you want to coin it, however you want to describe it. But it really comes down to the simple fact of, hey, you know, we were required at the age of 16 or 18 to the age of majority to come forward and to kind of validate our life, validate our birth certificate. None of us ever did that. None of us ever knew we had to do that. And if we did, we just blew it aside. But it's very important, because if we didn't do
that. And we're going right to the break, and when we come back, we'll get back on.
Yeah, folks, we will be right back. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcast Network.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Extend your life.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.